Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode is brought to you by Chai Pani Restaurant Group.
This week on Meat and Three, it's our season 4 finale, and we're sharing some of our greatest kitchen joys.
Maybe most people consider making it too much work or too messy, but this is the food that's worth the work and worth the wait.
You always know where the thing is because you put it away the right way the first time.
You just sort of stand there in front, you know, with your hand on your hip and one leg outstretched, glass of wine in your hand, staring into the refrigerator going, okay, speak to me.
Oh yeah, what are you doing with the celery tonight?
I'm making a simple syrup for a gin cocktail with the celery. And I also found a recipe for a celery soup that's going to use up the celery and the potatoes and some of that dill that we still have hanging out in there.
Tune in and be inspired to find the joy in your kitchen. And don't forget to subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. This week, we sit down with Ben Hundreds, co-founder of famed LA streetwear brand, The Hundreds. He's giving us the inside scoop on his latest creative endeavor, the Family Style Food Festival, which is happening in LA on Sunday, September 15th at Television City. It's going to be a day of streetwear meets food for limited drops for both dishes, t-shirts, hats, and everything in between. We are super excited to see such incredible culinary talent as John and Vitti, Secret Lasagna, Helen Ray's, and more, and some incredible designers like Verdi, James Jean, Mr. Cartoon, and Chinatown Market. We cannot wait. It's an awesome interview, and there's a lot of really great conversation about the new Venn diagram of streetwear meets food. In the second half of the show, we are in Silver Lake at Dangerbird Records Studios, hanging out with Brazilian singer-songwriter Samira Winter and her band, named after her last name, Winter. They're giving us some dreamy summer days mixed with some Boston chill. It's absolutely delicious shoegaze, and we are so excited. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
She wants to be the pretty girl you
welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one of your hosts, Darren Bresnitz. Welcome to the fall season of 2019. We are here with Ben Hundreds, who is the, well, co-founder of the Hundreds, but also co-founder of the Family Style Food Fest that's happening this September in Los Angeles. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you very much.
So, for those who are unfamiliar with the Family Style Food Fest, what is it?
It is a... I mean, the short pitch is it's a streetwear food festival. It's going to be a day where we are going to collide streetwear and food.
I love it. Now, before we get into the festival, yeah. I want a little bit about you and your relationship with food and food's relationship with the Hundreds. Like, where does food play a role in your life?
I grew up eating the best. My mom's a great chef. She's a great cook. She's an inspiration for me for making sure that the right food is always in front of you. And so I feel like from a young age, food's always been a part of my life.
Where'd you grow up?
In the Valley here in LA.
What'd you cook?
A lot of Persian food, but you know, she has her take on spaghetti and she has her take on chicken fajitas and, you know, she like her version of all of those things.
I always loved it when you have people who have a specific lens of food and then take the local food and then filter it through that. And you get this like, it's like, yes, it's I'll call it a fajita because that's the closest reference, yeah. But it's something completely different.
Yeah. And then over the last, you know, we've been in business 16 years and over the last 16 years, food has played a big part of the Hundreds, and it has been a big part of the Hundreds. And we've, you know, I feel like a lot of brands similar to ours over the years would go to the club and get tables and party, and Bobby and I would take, you know, 10 people to dinner instead. Mm. And it's always been like that. Bobby and I both love food. We love eating. And we've done projects with tons of restaurants. I think the first one we ever did was, it's got to be over 10 years ago, but it was a little Mexican restaurant over on Fig by USC called La Taquiza. And Bobby and I love that place. I still love that place. And, you know, from then we've gone on to work with all different kinds of restaurants and chefs. And
you did an apron with Hedley and Bennett. Which
yeah, we've done a couple, two aprons. With Hedley and Bennett. And Ellen's become a very good friend of ours. She'll be at the festival with something fun. So, food is important to us and always has been. And, you know, I'm sure it'll continue to be.
It's interesting as you get older how knowing the door guy at a club or a party has faded away to knowing how to get a seat on a Friday night at the right restaurant.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Like having that plug on, you know, Night Market Song at 8:30 on Saturday and getting a bottle of wine just sort of is a different type of flex.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that just shows that we're old.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that, but I think it's just, But it, in many ways, you know, the party trick of like getting into a party and skipping line is one thing, and it has appealed to a certain type of person. But the idea of being able to get a reservation somewhere or being able to know about food in a city, especially since you guys have traveled so much, it adds to just like your knowledge of culture and like what people are into and what trends are happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there have been so many food festivals happening in LA with the rise of food's popularity. What makes you want to start this one, and what are you trying to say? What's your unique point of view for this festival?
Why we're starting this? I don't know about all the other festivals. To be honest, I know there's a couple going on here in LA, and now that we're in the festival game. I guess I've noticed a few more pop up in the LA area, but I never really paid attention to that stuff before. I'm not a festival fan, and I'm not a food festival fan. The few that I've been to are just, they're not my style, and I didn't think they were that much fun, and I just figured that all of them are like that, and so I didn't care for it. And, you know, late last year, my team and I, we've been thinking about doing a music festival for many years now. And late last year, it's like, all right, we got a plan for 2019. What are we going to do? Should we get serious about the music festival? And I think we all looked at each other and we're like, you know, a music festival, there's one every other weekend. They're not special the way they were, and they're really expensive.
Oh, and those talent buys alone.
Oh, massive. And as soon as you put festival on anything, a musician's like, yeah, you got to pay me double.
Right? Yeah.
So I think that and right when we were having these conversations, I had met our partner in the festival, Miles. And Miles is an operator, and he's really good at what he does. And I had this idea, and I pitched it to him. I'm like, what do you think of a food festival? And they're like, what? Why? What are you talking about? And I'm like, I don't know. Let's see. And they're like, go ahead, try. Let's see how far you get. And so I started. And I started talking to a few chef friends of mine, and all of them kind of had like the same questions, like, what's going to be different? Why are you doing this? And I was like, look, I want to pair every restaurant with an artist, a brand, a creative, somebody, and your guys are going to make a dish, and we're going to make merch to go along with it. And I want people to come to this festival, and I want them to be as excited about the food as they are about the merch. And I think that the people that we have involved, I'm hoping will accomplish that.
You could argue that restaurants were the original inventors of the limited drop.
Yeah.
Because dishes, seasonality, you know, having to go to a place like Favacon or El Bulli to get these dishes that didn't exist anywhere else for limited time, and there's more people who want them, they can get the seats.
Yeah.
There's got to be some inspiration from that in there.
I actually have never thought of it like that, but you putting it like that, yeah, absolutely.
All right, that you can use that bullet point for future.
I will.
But there is that overlap in creativity, right? Between streetwear people and the chefs that you're working with.
Yeah, I'm seeing it firsthand. It actually trips me out. I'm watching, you know, Josh Vides and Burt Backman together. I put them together, and I'm watching them work together and create and collaborate. And it's amazing watching them. I'm watching Sean Weatherspoon work with Knuckle and Arjun to make...
Oh, those guys are wild.
Honestly, I think that what they're putting out at the festival, it's going to be it's awesome.
Is it?
And Sean's vegan, so they're making a vegan dish with Knuckle and Arjun from Bad Mash. And I like when they told me what they were making, I was like, oh, man.
But that's a great example, because think about how perfect their food and that whole genre of cuisine is for vegan, for vegetarian type of food.
Yeah, that's why I did that. I honestly thought that through, and I was like, I think Sean would be perfect with these guys because of that.
I mean, how much of these streetwear designers, how much do you guys talk about food? How much do you guys sit around?
There are a few that I can have conversations about restaurants and food with. Some care more than others, and I try to get the ones involved that I know care about food. Like Mike Sherman from Chinatown Market. I know my man could eat, and I've eaten with him, and I know what he likes, and what he, you know, I know he likes good food. And so it was very easy for me to go to Mike and be like, yo, we're doing this. I want you to be a part of it. Is there anyone you want to work with? And he was like, I'm down to do this. You know, I support you guys. Can you get me Petit Trois? It's my favorite restaurant. And I was like, I don't know. Let me try.
What was that pitch? Because I feel like that the streetwear artists are like, oh, that's a cool way for me to filter this work. But what was the pitch to the restaurants? Some of it's like Petit Trois, like Ludo is, I mean, I love him.
Yeah.
Big fan. But he does almost every single one of these festivals in LA. How do you get someone like that excited about this one?
It was me going to Ludo and saying, Ludo, I want you to be a part of this festival. And I have one of the most creative people on the planet wanting to work with you. And I don't want you to just come and be Petit Trois. I want you to come and work with this creative. And I want you to make some special merch, and I want you to create a special dish. And he's like, okay, I'm interested. And so it took me taking Mike to meet Ludo, and the two of them sitting down, and like as soon as they sat down, it was just like, oh, no, 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 like both of them. And yeah. By the end of the meeting, it was like, yes, let's go. And that's really all it took. I'm telling everyone, I'm trying to put everyone in a room together and be like, I just want you guys to vibe off each other. Figure it out, you know, and if there's something there, cool. If not, then maybe we'll find other partners for you guys. And for the most part, everyone has worked out really well.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk a little bit about the details of the festival, and then we're going to talk about some of the special limited drops that are happening at the festival as well, or whatever you can share with us, because yep. I know that's some of the secrets in the reveal. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Right now, baby, trying to get it all inside your brain now. It's a reflection. The sadistic pleasure you have got, it don't make no sense. 'Cause I get what I want right now. 'Cause I get what I want right now. So many crumbling. That you've got to let it all out. It's not a problem. It's not a problem. Just the modern world's way that's got you gone bringing you down. 'Cause I get.
This episode is brought to you by Chaipani Restaurant Group. From Bombay to Buncombe and Asheville to Atlanta, Chaipani has extended the love of food, culinary experience, and storytelling to the Southeast. Founded by Meherwani and Molly Irani, Chaipani Restaurant Group includes two locations of Chaipani, plus MG Road Bar and Lounge, Botiwala, Buxton Hall Barbecue, and their new spice company, Spicewala. Learn more about Chaipani and watch their documentary series, Cutting Chai, at ChaipaniRestaurantGroup.com. That's Chaipani RestaurantGroup.com.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I am here with Ben Hundreds talking about his upcoming first, hopefully annual, family-style food fest.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. So, you know, where the 100 store is located is also in this area that's also around, like, Animal, John and Vinny. Yeah. And you sort of see, if I could think of, like, a street or an area that really is, like, food and streetwear come to life, is, like, that right there.
Yeah.
Which is, in my mind, what the festival is going to be like. As you get these chefs in the room together with the streetwear artists, what is the most surprising piece of conversation or creative thought that's come out of those that you've been in the room for?
That is a great question. It's been inspiring for me to watch these people work together and see the crazy ideas. I know not all of them are going to stick against the wall, but like the crazy ideas of, wow, can we do this? What about this? What about, oh, what? And like both of them, like both sides, just like building. And then it's like, okay, let's come back down to earth. And like, yes, let's make this dish. Let's make this product. Let's put out this item. And so like just watching like all the crazy ideas between everyone, it's been inspiring for me and kind of like made me go to my team and be like, hey, we need to think a little bigger, you guys. Like,
I mean, it's pretty amazing to see the rise of, I would say, swag and clothing that restaurants are putting out on their own now. I would say that the majority of my hat collection or a sweatshirt collection is restaurant based.
Yeah, and honestly, that's a big part of why I'm doing this, because I believe that... Sorry to cut you off.
No, I was going to say, it's just, I'll say the number one sweatshirt that I see the most reaction to, hot pink, Madonna in sweatshirt.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a great sweatshirt.
Right, it's a great sweatshirt. And so I go like, all right, if that's the base level, that these restaurants are already putting out amazing merchandise on their own, how do you advise them to take it to that next level?
Well, I think that restaurants do make some good merch, but I don't think a lot of them take advantage of it. I think they could be doing better. I think they could be doing more. And I wanted to use... Look, I have a lot of friends that own restaurants in this city, and I always am pushing them. Let's get hats made. Let's get t-shirts made. Like, I have a print shop here, guys. Let me help you. Whatever it is. And a goal for me with this festival was to show all my friends that have restaurants, hey, look, like, we could really pump some stuff out. You guys can really do some great merch. And let me show you by pairing you with a great brand, a creative, a designer, an artist, and let's make something special that you guys wouldn't normally make, you know. And let's see how it's going to sell. We'll put this festival together to show you, like, you guys can sell meaningful merch if you guys want. And I've been saying it for a little bit now that I really believe that restaurant merch is the new band merch.
And, oh, yeah.
And I think that, you know, if you have a favorite restaurant, like, you're going to buy that t-shirt. I mean, my restaurant t-shirt and hat collection over the last 5 years is huge. And that's me. Like, I think that the average consumer now really, you know, they'll buy a John and Vinny's t-shirt if they know they can buy it. They'll buy Uncle Polly's hat's the number one hat right now. Period. I mean, in streetwear, in fashion, and in the food world. Like, that's just, it's the number one hat. And it's a small little restaurant right here in LA, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Roberta's has been doing it for a while, pumping out different hats and things like that from the in-house designer. Scar's Pizza in Lower
East
Side.
Yeah, yeah, he's great.
You can't get that hat.
Yeah.
That hat is gone. Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting now that restaurants have put out merch, like Fiona Bakery that shut down, that hat still exists. Like, it is this life after or outside the restaurant, or you swing into a different city, like London, and you pick up a St. John's sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the chefs that are coming in.
Sure.
I saw Evan Funky yesterday.
Yeah.
He dropped a little bit about what he's going to do. And I don't know what... I guess I don't know what you want to be surprised and what you don't want to be surprised.
No, we can talk about what he's making.
But I mean, like, he's going to come out and bang out focaccia.
Yeah.
Right?
Fucking fire.
Just bang on focaccia.
And make it focaccia that you can't get at the restaurant.
Right. So in addition to the limited edition streetwear drops, you're also doing limited edition plates. And so someone like an Evan Funky, he's putting up focaccia. But not just focaccia, the rosemary, everyone's had a taste of. If you haven't, do yourself a favor, go to Abbakinney. But he's doing different types of stuff. How are you deciding on who's putting up what? Is it all chefs? Like, is that part of it where if you want to try this dish, you got to come here, you can't get it anywhere else?
That's definitely a big part of it. And, you know, Evan is a good example where he's making us, not just his rosemary focaccia, but you'll be able to get a blueberry focaccia and this tomato focaccia that you can't get anywhere else. And you're right, like that focaccia, you do yourself a favor. If you haven't had it, go to Felix tonight and order it. That thing is, it's
eat it on the bench outside.
Yeah, for real. Like, it's the best.
But it's a good way. I mean, these sort of festivals are a good way to introduce people to maybe brands or chefs or this whole community that they're maybe never heard of or maybe feel intimidated by.
Well, my goal with this is I keep telling everybody, is I'm trying to convince all the streetwear kids to come to a food festival, because streetwear kids don't necessarily care so much about food. And then I got to convince all the food people to come to a streetwear festival, which I know they don't necessarily care about fashion and streetwear so much. And I know there is some overlap.
I mean, the center of that Venn diagram are the people who are freaking out about this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That people sitting inside those two circles are going, oh, I get this.
Yeah.
And I can't believe it's taken this long for this to happen.
Yeah. And so, convincing all these people to come out and do this is, you know, you're the perfect person for it.
I mean, yeah, just, you know, dedicate your life to one Venn diagram for 10 years and you wait long enough, it'll come around.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about some of the other things?
I would love to hear about some of the other chefs.
Well, some of the other things that we're serving are, okay, so Alvin Kalin is working with the guys from Burger Lords.
Shout out.
Yep. And they're working with Beyond Meats, and they're doing a vegan burger, which I mean, Alvin, first of all, is a burger master, but then him serving a vegan burger, I think that'll be a hit. Already at the guys at Burger Lords, their veggie burger, vegan burger over there is fire.
Oh yeah.
And so I just, you know, with Alvin's touch, I'm sure it's going to be even better. Something else we're doing is, Kenny Scharf, the artist, he is working with Kofax, and Kenny did a series of paintings many years ago, donut paintings, and I'm a huge fan of his donut paintings. And we're working, The Hundreds is working with working on a project with Kenny for 2020. And so we reached out to him and said, hey, would you also be willing to do a t-shirt or two with your donuts? And so he said yes. So we paired him with Kofax. Kofax is making the donuts that Kenny painted. And so you'll be able to eat Kenny Scharf donuts from Kofax. And then you'll be able to go buy Kofax Kenny Scharf t-shirts at the merch booth also. These are the kinds of things that we're putting together. You know, Uncle Paulie's is working with Modernica, and it's the first time Modernica is doing something, making something for the kitchen. They're making a cutting board, and they're making a sandwich that they're going to be using the cutting board right there in front of you to chop up the meat or whatever it is, and be serving that sandwich at the festival. And then you'll be able to buy the cutting board at the merch booth.
I mean,
so like these are the kinds of things.
I mean, no one else is doing that. You might see a hat from a festival, and you might see a t-shirt. And I have a lot of love for the Hot Luck guys down in Austin, but the fact that people are making products, the fact that you're calling back paintings or movements in different artists' careers that are then inspiring a dish, it's beautiful. It's this full circle thing.
Thank you.
The other thing that I really, really love about this festival is your charity aspect.
Yeah.
Homeboy Industries is legendary in LA. Yep. They have given opportunities to people for decades who may not have had another chance and have gotten this chance through cooking, through food.
Yeah.
I know Roy Choi did a lot of profile on them for Broken Bread. And then you're also working with No Kid Hungry.
Yep.
How do those collaborations come about, and what's the importance of having charity at this event?
Homeboy is someone we've been talking to for a long time, and we've been trying to work with them on a project. I feel like it's been a couple of years now, and when we came up with the idea for this thing earlier this year, it was just, yes, we need to get Homeboy involved. It makes so much sense in so many different ways. And so with them, honestly, I think that's going to be the... I think I don't know if it'll be the number one selling, but it's definitely my favorite graphic for the food festival. We're doing a t-shirt and a hoodie with Homeboy, and all profits, 100% of profits from all the sales that we do with Homeboy will go to their charity.
I love it.
And I honestly really do love it. And No Kid Hungry is a charity that a lot of chef friends that I'm, a lot of my chef friends work with No Kid Hungry, and Miles also had a relationship with them. And I also believe in what they do and what they're about. And so with them, we are doing an auction for some goods, something that's really special, and I don't want to talk about it just yet.
Yeah, that's fine.
And all the profits from the charity, not even all the profits, all the proceeds from that auction will go to No Kid Hungry. So I think it's great we have them involved. I think it's very important to have a charity aspect to something like this. Like, we're not a, this isn't just about making money and dollars and, you know, consumerism. I mean,
that's the flip side of this, where people are just like, it's ones off, it's limited, it's flipping it. Like, that's there's so much waste to it. To add the charity part is so important.
No, absolutely. We thought that we wouldn't be doing the festival without that, without this aspect of it. So
I love it. So we're a couple weeks out.
Yeah.
What is the most surprising thing, or the thing you never thought would pop up and be an issue as you head into the first year of your first food festival?
That's also a good question. I mean, there are honestly, there's so many, just this thing as a whole. It's so much, what it really is. It's so much coordination. It's so many phone calls. It's so many emails. You know, it's not that we're just throwing a food festival, like we're throwing a food and streetwear festival.
And so music.
And music. Music is a huge part of this. So like all the coordinating with all these different restaurants, brands, creative, musicians, designers, and then like all the sponsors, it's like, it's just a ton of coordination. I guess I never appreciated how much work goes into putting an event like this, and I'm blown away by it. And you know, I tip my hat to everyone that's ever done anything like this before.
Yeah, because it's not just you're like, oh, ship it 2 weeks out, it'll last. It's like, no, we need refrigeration, everything's perishable.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Super excited, can't wait for it. Tickets still available. Where can people go to get more information about it? Where can people go to get tickets and all of that?
You can go to familystylefest.com to buy tickets and learn more about the festival, or you can go to Family Style Fest at Family Style Fest on Instagram and on Twitter, and you could check on all the updates. We're still adding new restaurants, new brands. We have a couple. Oh, I guess by the time you announce this, you'll know that Prince Street Pizza and Cat's Deli from New York are popping up at the festival.
Oh my God.
So, and like, this is a real Cat's pop-up. This isn't like a,
what they just did.
What was that? That you get like a pack and you go home and make it at home. But anyway, this is a real Cat's Deli pop-up. So the best part about the real Cat's Deli pop-up is that we're bringing out 2-3 guys that work the counter at Cat's is in New York, and they're going to be there
slicing
for you guys, making sandwiches. So like,
he did a couple of stuff with Mishka back in the day. Like a Mishka Cats.
Yeah. We did. He did a series maybe 5 or 6 years ago with us, with Mishka and a couple other brands for like over six. A Life did one over like a 6 month period. He did one like a month. Yeah, we did. We worked with Cats before and did a pop up in their, what, that space isn't there anymore, but was
the next one. Yeah, it was great. That was really fun. I was like, oh wow. And it's funny because now that you guys are doing this, I thought back and I was like, oh yeah, that sort of existed, but it never really got off the ground, and it seemed like such a wild mixing of two worlds. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Excited for this.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh my God, thank you for throwing this and for supporting the community.
Yeah.
We have another song from the archives, and then we have a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. I'm Damon Bolte.
And I'm Souther Teague.
Together we host The Speakeasy, a show where we discuss cocktails, spirits, wine, beer, tea, coffee, and all things in the liquid universe.
Yeah, our guests range from bartenders and brewers, alchemists and ambassadors, roasters and regulars, hippies and homebrewers, and every expert enthusiast in between.
Browse episodes of The Speakeasy wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are at the legendary Dangerbird Record Studios in Silver Lake. It's a gorgeous day towards the end of summer, and we have Winter in the house. Welcome to Snacky Tunes, Winter.
Thanks. We're happy to be here.
Samira, you grew up in Brazil?
Yeah, I grew up in Brazil, in Curitiba, in the south of Brazil.
Nice. What were your earliest memories of food and music from growing up in Brazil?
So for music, so my dad's American, and he listened to a lot of like punk rock. So people like Dead Kennedys, like The Cramps. But then my mom listened to a lot of Brazilian popular music, which is like Djavan, Caetano Veloso, Gal Costa, Milton Nascimento. And so I grew up with both of those. And then food-wise, at the time, I wasn't vegetarian, because now I am vegetarian, but I grew up with a lot of the typical foods, feijoada, rice, beans, plantains. And then in the south of Brazil, where I'm from, there's a lot of European influence. So there's a lot of afternoon coffee and tea, pastries, German things. So kind of a mix.
A real mix. Brazil's a little bit more of a melting pot than people would think. How did that affect what you loved about your own personal journey of music and getting into different cultures as you grew up?
I think it really kept me open-minded, because there was such a mix of people being into European things, people being into American things, people being into Brazilian things, people being into African influenced things. So I think I just kind of always had an open mind, musically, food-wise. Just kind of the way I walk about this earth is pretty open-minded. Yeah, I think it was a really good experience.
What took you away from home? What pulled you to the States?
So it was kind of a plan of my dad's, who he's American, to have me go to school in the U.S. Even though at the time in high school I was kind of like, oh, maybe I should stay here because I really loved living in Brazil. It was a plan to go to college in Boston.
Shout out. That's where I went to school.
Oh, cool. Where'd you go?
I went to BU.
Nice. I went to Emerson.
Ooh, down the street.
Yeah.
Did you ever eat at Anna's Taqueria?
Uh-huh. The best.
The best.
Love it so much.
I dream of it.
So much. You know where I dream of, too? A couple places. Did you ever go to Finale, that dessert place?
No. I'm not a big dessert guy.
It's so good.
Did you ever go to El Pelon? It was another Mexican place. It was near Fenway.
No.
There was this really cool old thrift store. I still remember I got these old Pixies 12 inches there.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it was like record shopping and tacos and burritos. Oh,
so good.
Yeah. A little bit of a cultural difference between Brazil and Boston.
It was the biggest shock ever.
At least you got there in the fall. At least you weren't thrown right into winter.
I know. It was the biggest shock, though.
I mean, what is that like growing up in Brazil and then going to Boston? Is very specific. For anyone who hasn't spent time in Boston, it's a very, very specific city. Much more so than in New York or Los Angeles.
It definitely made me grow up really way more serious of a place, very academic. Even just dressing-wise, like, people's style is so, it's more conservative. It's all navy, black, stripes, that's it, you know?
They don't let you into Boston without a pair of black pants.
Yeah, you need.
You need a good pair of black pants.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, it was a shock, definitely.
And a good punk scene. In Boston, or in some like post-hardcore type of bands.
I mean, the thing about Boston is I think it fluctuates a lot, but for me it was really important because that's where I really discovered like shoegaze and dream pop and kind of like a like East Coast indie rock, because and a lot of noise and ambient music too, which I think if I would have gone to school anywhere else, I probably would have been influenced in a different way. So it was really crucial for that, and I'll always be so thankful for that experience.
And they have a strong DIY scene, a lot of house shows, a lot of things like that. Did you get in the mix with those?
Yeah, because I was studying journalism. So for my last year, I was doing a documentary on the noise scene in Boston. So I was just going to basement shows, interviewing people. I was just super into that.
Awesome. Let's hear a song. First one's in Portuguese, right?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's called Memória Colorida, which means colorful memory.
Love it. Okay, here we go. We got Winter at Dangerbird Records Studios on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thank you. Oh, man. That took me back to Boston dorm days, 2003. Isn't it a good thing? It's a good thing.
That's where it all starts.
Doesn't it?
Boston dorm rooms. Like, literally, that's how everything started.
I mean, I think I'm a little bit older, but definitely tail end of Napster days for me. And, God, I can't remember. There was a website that used to put up all like full live indie rock concerts. I listened to like Ida and The Makeup and just like sit in my room and be like, no one gets me.
I loved it because I would get so moody. Like, I would be like in the cold, in the rain, listening to super like, you know, depressing music. Like, and I would just be like, yeah, I'm so moody. And I couldn't go out because it was so much snow. Like,
I know.
You couldn't do anything.
I think my darkest days were Boston winters.
Dude, and I gained so much weight too. I was eating a bagel like every day.
Oh, yeah.
And pizza. It was so good though. It was so good.
Yeah, for... For people who don't know, Boston has its own specific type of pizza, which is very regional, very specific. When did you start getting into making your own music? Was it before you went to college? Was it your dad's musical influence, your mom's musical influence, or was it those moody, dark days of Boston?
Well, winter definitely started in the moody, dark days of Boston.
So aptly named band.
In the winter, yeah. Definitely. Because I couldn't do anything else except just play music. But I started writing like when I was like 12 or so, and just, but I never really like showed it to people. I always talked about music as a hobby. I'd be like, oh no, like not really that serious about it. And then... Yeah, I think it was in college, really, that I started. I played in a band with some friends in a dorm room and all of that, and it was so fun. And so I was like, oh, man, maybe I should try to, like, record some songs that I have. And, yeah, that's how it started around in college, mainly.
And when did it start creeping in as something that you were doing as less as a distraction from the cold as something more full-time, more serious?
Well, it's funny because I had a boyfriend at the time that was like, he kind of had like an intervention with me. He was like, Samira, you need to like start taking yourself more seriously because it's clear that you love music. Like, you just need to give it a try. And so after that, I kind of like woke up and I was like, okay, I need to like actually try to do it and try to have a band and all of that. But I think when I moved to L.A., I think the vibe here in LA, everyone is such a hard worker, but in like this very relaxed way, which is sort of the way I work, is like I'm always really working, but it's a weird, it's like a different way of working than in the East Coast where everyone's so stressed out.
Oh yeah.
Here everyone's working super hard, but everyone's making it look easy.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I wrestle with this too, because I see people, and because I spent so much time in New York, of just people who would just sit at their desks and be so stressed, but not do the work. And I go, you're stressed because you're just, you're bullshitting for 4 hours. Just fucking do your work and go home. And here it's more like do your work and then go hang outside.
Yeah.
And go hit nature.
Yeah.
Did you drive across country?
I flew, but I did a trip. That was like my first California trip, which was just like a West Coast trip with my sister when I moved here. But yeah, I mean, I think I honestly wouldn't be where I am right now if it weren't for my bandmates.
Oh, yeah.
And like be able to sound good and take it seriously, because like I think it's so you can't really do it by yourself. And so just having people that are available to tour, people that are supporting you who want to make the song sound good, I think that's what really takes it to the next level.
Yeah. How did you meet the three other people standing in this room?
So I met each person separate, like in different ways. I met Justine because I played a show with her old band, Summer Twins.
Oh, that's a good band name. Wait, so was it Winter and Summer Twins on the same
film? We played a lot of shows together.
We've actually
and it was amazing because everyone would just be like, oh my God, Winter, Summer.
I mean, I know you're mocking those people, but...
No, it's cool.
Did you make t-shirts?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have Winter and Summer Twins t-shirts.
Ooh. Yeah, we did actually make... did a collab t-shirt. Mm-hmm.
If you have size for a 37-year-old
we
dad
do.
Large...
We do.
We actually
we couldn't
do.
Really get rid of them.
Yeah, right.
This bright color.
Oh. You're speaking like, my language.
They were cool.
I'll take one off your hands.
I'm going to bring you one.
Okay. What about the two... What about... Guitar and drums, how'd you guys meet?
So Anders, I met through Justine.
No, we met briefly like several years before that.
Across the street, Silver Lake Lounge.
Silver Lake Lounge.
Oh.
Yep.
Legendary dive bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just remember what he was wearing.
What was it wearing?
Yeah, wears the coolest clothes. He was
That's
wearing like
how
a
I met
fur
him
coat.
Too. It's like his outfit, just like you Stands have to out. Say something because he dresses so cool.
Intentional?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, it's the outfits speak more than I ever possibly could.
Hey man, fashion's a beautiful thing.
Fashion is life.
Yeah.
And then I met Ian because we played a show with Vinyl Williams, the band he used to play in, like a couple years ago.
So this is always interesting to me because you have two people who were in bands before they joined this one. How does that conversation go?
No, but
were you
the
in a,
is,
were you in a band too?
Yeah.
They're all mm-hmm. still yeah. in other bands.
Oh yeah, it's that vibe.
They're all still in other bands, yeah.
I mean, we'll do off the record of what your favorite band to play in, but we'll say Winter. We'll say Winter on the record. I mean, I found that a lot about the LA scene, that there is a lot of overlap and a lot of people playing in different projects and collaborating and things like that.
I think it works because I think there's different cycles of like creativity and touring, and I think there's cycles of being super busy and then cycles of being at home, and so like being at home, it's like you can play in other projects and have time for all of that.
Awesome. Well, let's hear another song. This next one's about your cat, right?
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Zoe.
I assume that's the cat's name.
It is.
Okay. That'd be really funny if it was not her name. Here we go. Winter on Snacky Tunes at Dangerbird Record Studios on heritageradionetwork.org. amazing.
Thanks.
Does your cat know that that song's about her?
I think she knows.
You're like, Zoe, I have something special for you. It's an audio treat. So you have a few albums out, and you just put out your latest EP. When do you decide it's time to put out new music? And can you talk to me a little bit about what was the inspiration? I mean, it feels like dreamy West Coast days in this last EP.
Definitely.
Definitely not that Boston Dark days.
Definitely not. No. That EP was kind of like this like summer, really, that I wrote a lot of those songs, except Always Teenager, which was probably like a super... It was just like a really sad moment. But other than that, all those songs were very happy moments inspired by the summer and, yeah, living here and having really good memories.
What do you like more? Or I guess it's different about writing happy California summery music versus those dark Boston tracks.
It's weird because it's like sometimes I want to be writing a certain thing, but I think it really has to do where you're at. Like personally, like I feel like I'm always going through something different and kind of at a different place internally. And so it ends up just reflecting that. Like sometimes I'm like, oh man, I really want to make like this kind of like vibe. But if I'm not experiencing that, then it's hard for me to really feel it, you know, and really make that.
I get that. True songwriting.
Yeah, it's pretty personal. And then sometimes it's just sort of like, I feel like I'm very inspired by music, so it's like the music that I'm into inspires what I write to.
Do you ever pull from those old punk bands from your dad or any of the more classical Brazilian stuff from your mom?
So I haven't really done any of the punk stuff, but for my mom, I have. I did a record with my friend all on like cassette tape, and it's pretty much, I don't know if I'll ever do a record like that again, but it's all like very Brazilian and like still pretty dreamy, but kind of more like late 60s kind of inspired music. Yeah, so I did that. It's like Winter and Triptides, and the album is called Estrela Magica.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So all you need is a cassette player, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I still got one. And you have some live shows coming up, right? You're hitting the road September,
yeah,
later this month.
We're playing at the Bootleg, I believe, on the 21st.
Everyone looks around.
I'm like looking around.
Andy usually knows these things. Now. Is there a nod from Andy in there? No? Maybe?
I think it's either the 20th or the 21st.
All right, we'll check the tapes.
It's with a band from Brazil.
Oh, nice.
Called Bugarins.
Do you make that? I mean, you toured down there, didn't you?
I have.
What's the difference in playing shows in Brazil versus playing in the States?
Oh my God, it's so different. Justine can elaborate.
You will probably get shocked at least, like, 3 times.
Oh, physically?
like shocked by the mic.
Oh.
That's the only thing that was a little bit stressful. Everything else was a ton of fun. Everything starts late. So, like, they'll say the show starts at 9, but it will start at, like, midnight.
Oh, man.
So, we played once at 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
Because...
No, I feel like I've played a couple times at, like, 5.
You probably have, but I've only done this once, and I was, like, falling asleep, just, like, did it, and it was insane.
I feel like that would drive me nuts. Yeah. As a planner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I am. I'm pretty, like, specific, like, with time.
Yeah, she's a Virgo. She really helps the band just, like, stay together. Like, stay on time. Are we waking
Everything
up?
Has to be on time.
Just go to the promoter. Hey, so I'm seeing we're 6 hours behind, which is totally fine, but... Do you have a cot I can nap on?
There's also a lot of making out. People make out, like,
yeah,
right in front
like
of you.
Like, right
a lot
in front
of
the,
of
you'll be playing, and they'll just, like, be right in the, standing in the front row, like me, which is cool. It's like, oh, okay.
No, they really get in the music. It's like, yeah. It's just like, woo.
Yeah, a little bit different than the States.
Yeah.
States is like, oh, I think I saw some head nodding in the back. And you're also playing Desert Days, one of California's best music festivals.
Yeah, I mean, I I honestly think right now it's like probably one of the best like in the world.
Yeah, I'll say in the world. I mean, I was being fair to the rest of the state in the world, but or the country. But
it's like so exciting to be on the same bill as like Stereolab. Like,
yeah, that's so wild. I think they have a clear point of view. I think a lot of festivals now start and they go, all right, we know that we can just pull this touring festival list and we'll just put it in our own backyard. But that one feels very specific.
Yeah, I think it's very experiential, and I'm so excited to play it.
Awesome. All right, well, I want to make sure we have enough time for one more song, but where can people hear the music, follow you on Instagram, look for tour dates, figure out if it's the 21st or the 22nd?
So Daydreaming Winter is the key word. Instagram is Daydreaming Winter, Facebook, Bandcamp, and then on Spotify, it's just Winter.
Sweet. Well, thank you, all of you.
Thank you. Thank what you a pleasure.
Yeah, this is great. Shout out to Zoe, wherever you are.
Shout out to Zoe and all the cats listening.
All the cats listening. I think at this point we have more cats listening than people, so we're pretty stoked. I want to thank you to Dangerbird Records, Andy, everyone. Thank you so much. Here's Winter one more time on Snacky Tunes, heritageradionetwork.org. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Don't know.
Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.